WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Becky. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 ATD on the eve of Valentine's Day. That's right, it is February 13th as we come to you live from the broadcast house. Your producer this evening is none other than George. George behind the glass. How are you, George?
I'm doing well. How about you, Kevin?
George, we may tap you to chime in from time to time this evening as we have the usual lengthy cast of guests who'll be joining us, a variety of topics, starting with State Senator John Keenan. We'll check in with the senator, find out how things are going as we're going on to almost 2 months, actually a month and a half since the start of the legislative session. Let's find out what's going on, checking in, expectations with the new administration, and some of the things that the senator is going to look to file or refile this session. So we'll check in with Senator John Keenan. And then John Brown. This is part of our community conversations. And John Brown is a selectman in the town of Pembroke. He'll be joining us. We'll chat about some of the things that are going on in his community. He gets a chance to weigh in on it and give us updates as they are happening. Hour number two, Dave Wedge, best-selling author. Dave Wedge will be joining us, and we're going to talk about a show that they got coming up. It's going to be at the Wilbur Theater for one night, George, one night. And last year, around April, they actually did a stage adaptation of several of the books that Casey Sherman and Dave Wedge wrote together. I think there might have been one or two books that maybe Casey might have written. But what they did is they took little nuggets of each of those books, including one, the one that they wrote about Whitey Bulger, and the one in regards to John Lennon's Last Night that they wrote with Mr. Patterson. And you see these little snippets, and there would be people, actors who would come out and they would play the various roles. Well, it so happens, and one of my questions to Dave will be this particular stage adaptation of Hunting Whitey. And they have brought in a special guest. Actually, they have an actor, somebody who's well known from his work, whether it was Band of Brothers, also, I believe he was in the Captain America series. Actually, he was in Captain America First Avenger. Red 2, Van Helsing, The Flash, just to name a couple here. He was also in, and I'm surprised it's not in here, and that is the remake of Walking Tall with Dwayne Johnson. He played like the sinister casino owner.
This is not Chris Evans, is it?
No, it's not. It would be good, though, seeing that Chris Evans is a Massachusetts native. No, it's none other than Neil McDonough.
Oh, I heard of him.
Neil McDonough. He's going to play Whitey. And we're going to talk about that and some of the other things that that Dave is working on. I might even chat with him a little bit about his book 12 in regards to Tom Brady. We had him on last year when we thought Tom Brady was going to retire and that, he didn't. He
unretired.
Unretired after 40 days. So we're going to, again, where Tom has actually filed his retirement paperwork. We'll ask Dave about that. And
it's in the books.
It's in the books now. So we'll talk with Dave about that. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the Super Bowl, everything to do with the Super Bowl.
What a tight game that was yesterday.
It was a hell of a game. We're going to have WATD Sports Director Quinn Kelly joining us. And we're going to have a few other folks who'll either join us by phone or in person.
If this thing called civilization was going to end, I think it would have ceased during one of the two world wars. My grandparents never gave up. They worked and lived till the bitter end, which wasn't bitter at all. Actually, it was sweet. Their life was sweet. I want my life the same. I want to work, coach my kids' soccer team, go out to eat after, and then come home to my bed where I can rest my bones. Then get up and do it all again tomorrow. That's what I want. That's what I'm working for. And that is my American dream. I can't do it alone. I need you. We need each other. We're all in this together, and together we can have our American dreams. As long as we're willing to do what is necessary to survive on this marble called Earth. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and now New Hampshire. Brennan's Smoke Shop, customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back. And joining us is an expert on the Super Bowl and the Super Bowl commercials and snacks. State Senator John Keenan is here joining us. Senator, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm not so sure I'm an expert on any of the above, but I'm doing well, thanks.
Did you have a favorite moment during the Super Bowl? What did you? Was there a commercial that you said, "Hey, that sticks out"? Did you like the halftime show?
I thought the halftime show was good. I thought the staging of it was incredible. I don't know how they pulled that off. And in terms of the game itself, I thought it was a great game, very competitive. I did have a feeling when Mahomes got hurt that he wasn't as hurt as bad as he was. And I texted my sons, and they said, "What do you think of the second half?" I said, "I don't think he was hurt as bad as he let on." And he managed to come back pretty well in the second half.
A la Paul Pierce? A la 2008 Paul Pierce?
Yes. I may not admit that, that about Paul wrong Pierce, with that, but it was a similar thing, which was similar to Larry Bird when he legitimately hurt his back and then he came running back on the court. So, yes, I do think he overplayed it a little bit, maybe for strategic purposes. And then as far as commercials, obviously I'm partial to the Boston commercials, the Dunkin' commercial.
Yeah.
And then I love the Boston accent and the Sam Adams commercials. It's a little overplayed as well.
Yeah.
But so anything that's local I like.
Yeah, I definitely like the better for the Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez commercial was funny. It shows how personable Affleck is. Yep. And I think we knew this as we anticipated this was coming. But this is good for local commerce to have, you know, these Hollywood stars doing stuff locally.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it drew a lot of attention when they were doing it. Most people figured it was for a commercial, and then there it was. And anything that promotes a local brand is a good thing.
Now, if you watch a big event like this, whether it's the Super Bowl or let's say one of the Boston sports teams makes it to a championship, is there like, are you someone who you go hang out amongst the people and you snack with what the people are snacking on, or are you just at home with the missus and enjoying something?
Well, until the boys got older, it was the boys and friends and whoever, and we used to go up to a neighbor's house as well for a neighborhood dinner. So that was a lot of fun.
Wow.
But my youngest now is 22. He's out of college, so we were in regular communication by text. But my wife and I actually went out and grabbed a bite to eat for the first half. The restaurant was quiet. The TVs were on, and it was nice.
So here we are. We're cruising through February. I can't believe we're almost at the end of February. right? Tomorrow's the halfway point, right? Because we only got 28 days in February.
Oh, yeah. It's going fast.
It is going fast. What? How has the new legislative session started for you? A lot of different things up at the State House. You have a new administration, a Democratic administration, where the past four sessions, you've had a Republican administration.
That's a little bit different in terms of just the turnover. Just to have a new governor after 8 years means that, you know, it's not as routinized as was. It's not as, things are moving a little bit differently. So the Governor Healey is working on her budget. We'll get that. And then the House will do their budget. April, we'll do ours in May. So it'll be interesting to see what she prioritizes within her budget. She's shown a little bit that, obviously, there are certain things that are priorities for hers. Housing is one. Mm-hmm. Transportation is another. She rode the MBTA last week, I think it was. And so that was good to see. It'd be nice to see people ride it more people ride it more often. But so we'll see. I think it's going to be somewhat of a continuation of the style of Charlie Baker, meaning willing to work with other people, pragmatic, practical, looking to get things done as opposed to getting involved in some of the crazy political things that go on.
It's funny you say that, because the first thing that comes to mind isn't necessarily who was Governor Charlie Baker at the time, now Maura Healey, but the Lieutenant Governor, and knowing that what Karen Pulido did and how she would have community compacts with as many of the 351 communities here in the Commonwealth, that in fact it seems as though Kim Driscoll, who, you know, a former mayor of Salem,
right,
is going to kind of step into that and kind of continue that trend. How important is it that there's continuity when it comes to government?
Very important. There's something to be said for having somebody in the executive branch with extensive local government experience, and that's what Kim Driscoll brings to it. And that's where Karen Pulido's value was to Governor Baker, although I think he had served on the select board up in Swampscott. But she brought a lot of local experience, and she really focused on communities and municipalities during her tenure as Lieutenant Governor. And I think Kim Driscoll will do the same. She brings that same background, that same interest, that same commitment to local matters that is really important for a governor to know, to have, and to have a partner and Kim Driscoll that does that is very valuable for Maura Healey.
How important is it, the team that the governor puts around herself and Kim Driscoll, especially when it comes to someone who oversees finances, has to keep an eye on what the revenue trends are going to be? Because I think that might have been the key to success for the last administration. And you want to kind of keep an eye. You want to be ahead of any trend, whether it's an upward trend or maybe a downward, where we're not seeing as much revenue flowing in.
Right. Last session, we anticipated with COVID that our revenues would drop rather dramatically, and we're making plans for a pretty dire situation. Both the executive branch, meaning the governor's office, and the legislature were predicting that revenues would drop. It was a big unknown, but that's what the general sense was. Ultimately, revenues did really well, and it was a time where we had some unprecedented revenues, and we were able to use that money in a few different ways. One, to bolster our stabilization or our rainy day account. It's now at a record high, and hopefully we won't need that, but there's some questions about what comes next in the economy. We were able to do that to fund programs that had been lacking in funding for many years. And then also this past late fall, early winter, under relatively unknown section of law, we were able to give $3 billion back to taxpayers. And as we enter the spring, there's a lot of talk about doing some additional tax relief measures. So it's really important to have a good eye on your finances to know where the trends are going and to plan accordingly. You don't want to be taken by surprise.
The couple of things that you had mentioned earlier that the Governor Healey has already kind of put together a blue ribbon panel, especially for housing, wants to try to tackle the MBTA and all of its problems. How important is it when it comes to housing that there's sufficient water supply, especially also when we're talking economic development on the South Shore?
It's really important. The South Shore Chamber of Commerce had done a study on the need for housing in this region, and that drew a lot of attention to the fact that housing was lacking here.
Sure.
And as communities looked at what their options were to produce more housing, those that were interested in doing it, many of them realized that they had some infrastructure issues. in the communities that I represent, water and sewer infrastructure is a real issue. Some operate off a well system, some operate off of reservoirs, and the sewer systems in many cases are old, and there's some real issues with, for lack, not to get into technical terms, but inflow and infiltration to that puts a greater demand on your treatment plant. And so all those things have to be addressed if we want to do more housing. And then to do more housing, we have to do it in a way that provides the housing and doesn't impact water, sewer, and even schools and roads and bridges. But we have to do it. There is just an enormous need for housing in this Commonwealth. And if we want to stay competitive with the rest of the country, we have to do it.
Not to go too deep down this rabbit hole, because we could probably talk for a while about it, but issues with PFAS. I know that because, you know, I watch what goes on in your district and the work that you've done with your other legislative colleagues to try to secure monies for filters to be able to clean up water from PFAS. But also, look what's going on. We haven't seen that much snow. And this is going to spell possibly an issue come the spring and the summer when it comes to having enough water and possibly having a drought.
Right, so the latest numbers are that I think in Massachusetts we've been placed in a normal situation relative to drought. So that's a good thing. A lot of the concerns that we had as far as recently as last August have disappeared. So we're in a normal condition in terms of where we are with drought. PFAS is a whole other issue.
Sure.
We've got some contaminated, obviously, watersheds and water supplies that we're going to have to address. There's some discussion about whether the federal standard is the correct standard, whether it's too stringent or not. But I think we've got to pay attention to making sure that the water we deliver is not contaminated. And then we have to address the source of PFAS, which is these forever chemicals that are used in so many different products.
Right.
And we've got to address that. Otherwise, we're just doing temporary stopgap measures.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we are privileged to have on a regular basis many of our legislators, including State Senator John Keenan, who comes in on a quarterly basis, sometimes more, depending on his schedule and the conversations we're going to have. Let's talk a little bit about the start of the session for you and some of the legislation that you may have filed that you're looking at. Maybe you've decided you're going to co-sponsor. Maybe you're going to author the bill itself. Well, what are some of the things that you have in the works that you've already filed?
And one of the things that we'd like to work on right out of the gate is the revenge porn legislation. Governor Baker had filed legislation about a year and a half ago that would make it criminal to share images of people without their consent. In Massachusetts, we're one of only a couple states where you can consent to having your photograph taken, but that isn't. But then if somebody goes and shares it on the internet without your consent, that's not illegal. And so this legislation would make the sharing of images illegal in Massachusetts. It's most prevalent among young people, unfortunately. And so what we would do is we would look to divert them and to get them some counseling and some programming to make them realize that this is not something you should be doing. With adults, it would make it a felony to share without permission an image of somebody, even if there was consent given to take that image. There's been some really, really sad, terrible stories that I have heard firsthand from people that have found themselves in this situation. It's just devastating. And so we're going to really push hard. It passed in the House of Representatives last session. It passed in the Senate last session. It was not able to get to the governor's desk at the end of the session. So we're going to push really hard at the beginning on that one. And that's just one of the many bills that we'll be working on.
Anything that was not necessarily successful last session, but you feel is a tried and true good bill, maybe it needed a little tweaking, that is going to be amongst the thousands of bills that will be filed by you and your colleagues?
There are so many that fall into that category. One that we've been working on is what I call it the 30-day bill. Mm. It's access to full spectrum of addiction care. And what the bill would be to provide insurance coverage of 30 days for people who are in recovery and addiction recovery programs. Right now, under law, it's only 14 days. Some insurance companies offer more than 14 days. MassHealth offers more than 14 days. We want to make sure that when somebody needs assistance, when they're in a program, they know that they're going to go through the full spectrum of treatment and care. And so we'll look to have insurance coverage in place for that.
That's definitely fantastic. And you and I had a pre-show conversation. One of the things that you had brought up that is kind of near and dear to myself outside of these microphones is a streaming bill that I know is going to be submitted for its for a third file, and that is where a nominal fee would be assessed to individuals who use streaming platforms like the Netflix, the Hulus, the Disney Pluses, because these days people more and more are cutting the cord, and what that does is it affects hyperlocal access centers like Marshfield Community Television, PAC TV, you know, Hingham, Norwell, you name it, run the gamut. And these were media outlets that during the pandemic rose to the challenge to make sure that when it came to a government meeting, when it came to a community events that were happening where people couldn't go out, they were providing that. Unfortunately, the money that public access centers or PEG access centers receives is through their licensing agreements through, you know, Comcast or Verizon or both. And for that licensing agreement, they get enough money to keep the lights on and buy new equipment from time to time. But if Comcast or Verizon keep increasing the costs of a cable bill, people will go, you know what, I'll just have a couple of these a la carte services, these applications. I'll watch Hulu, I'll watch Netflix, and I'll forego Comcast.
Yeah, it's not a good thing. Local access television, government access television is just really, really important to keeping people informed at what's going on in their communities. And oftentimes, and more so now, what's going on in the communities is a reflection of what's going on statewide or nationally. And so giving people the ability to tune in and see what it is that's impacting their neighborhood, their town, their city, I think is something that can't be understated. And it's just good for the democratic process, you know, to get people involved in their community to that awareness, whether it's a license board, a planning board, a zoning board, a select board meeting, all of those things. And cable is how people view that. So to put a small fee on these streaming services to keep that going is really important. And then I think longer term, there's going to have to be a way to, you know, take that production that's done at the local level and perhaps integrate it into some of these streaming services so that people do have access to it. But the funding has to be there for the production of that great programming.
Probably one of the last questions I would ask you in regards to what you do. Any changes as far as any of your committee assignments? Anything maybe moving from vice chair to chairman? Any changes for you?
We don't know yet. Last week we did the rules that will govern the Senate and the House and when we act jointly. And this week we should hear on our committee assignments, and if not this week, then next week. And so that's unknown at this point. But again, we should be hearing pretty shortly. And in terms of other things that have changed, my district has changed a little bit. I now represent Hanover, whereas in the past I represented more of Braintree. I lost a portion of Braintree during redistricting and picked up all of Hanover. So we've been out and about in Hanover meeting everybody. We were there today for office hours, had a great time this morning chatting with people, seeing people. So we're excited about it. But that's been a change. It's moved me further south. But we're really looking forward to it.
It's funny, earlier you had mentioned about the study that was done by the South Shore Chamber. And what comes to mind is I actually had Peter Foreman and former Braintree Mayor Joe Sullivan, who kind of is part of the whole transportation component to that, in here talking about that plan. That if folks want to hear the full interview, it is on the Monday Night Talk podcast. Anything else in closing that we haven't touched upon during your visit here today?
Well, we talked about the Super Bowl. How about the Celtics and the Red Sox?
You'll get more out of
the Bruins.
Bruins, a little bit of a hiccup coming out of the All-Star break. Yes. That's to be expected. They're going for the cup.
Yeah, I think both the Bruins and the Celtics are favored. I think it's going to be a really exciting spring having both of them competing in the Bruins' case for the cup and the Celtics for the championship. Red Sox, I guess we'll have to wait and see. They've had some interesting off-season pickups. But I think Rafael Devers is one of the few people that's been there for the last several years. I think he's now one of the senior people on the team in terms of their tenure, which is incredible because he's only in his 20s, I think. 27?
I will tell you, I was at the ballpark a couple of times last year, and a lot of folks were chanting for Xander Bogaerts to sign him, re-sign him. We'll see. Let's see what the crowds say, at Fenway this year, and let's see how they end up doing. But I want to thank you again for coming in and being a fantastic legislator to share what's going on and keep us all up to date.
Great. Thanks for the opportunity. I really enjoy it and welcome it. Thank you.
Right. He is State Senator Judd Keenan, I guess, for this first segment. We're going to step aside, and we'll have John Brown should be joining us any moment here on Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Get ready for high school basketball on the WATD Sports Network. The week begins as the Cohasset Skippers travel to Southeastern RVT for a Tuesday night matchup. Tip-off at 6:30 on 101.1 WBMS. Then, on Thursday night, it's a crosstown showdown on WBMS between Plymouth North and Plymouth South. Coverage begins after the 6 o'clock news. Friday night, the Duxbury Dragons receive a visit from the Falmouth Clippers in our South Shore Game of the Week. We bring you tip-off at 6:30 on 95.9 WATD. High school basketball on the WATD Sports Network. South Shore Sports live here.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right. And we have returned. We await, actually, here he comes. Had I known, I would have had the timpani warming up as our guest is arriving. He is Mr. John Brown. He would tell you that he is not necessarily the dullest guy that you would know. He's just part of a group that's called that.
And they're good guys too.
They are good guys.
They do a lot too. I mean, last year alone, they gave so much money to the Council on Aging, fuel assistance, you name it. They were just off the hook for helping others. And then going out to lunch every once in a while.
I see you striding in here with your Pembroke Titans sweatshirt. Yep. Do you all sports, or are there particular sports that you follow for certain reasons when it comes to Pembroke?
Mostly I'm following what my son's doing since he's a freshman this year. And so he was part of the Titans basketball program. Nice. And his last game for the year is tomorrow against Hingham. Ooh. So anyone coming on out, 3:30.
Hingham's a wagon.
Check out the Pembroke Titans teams.
Is he freshman, or has he made it to JV?
Yeah, he's a freshman.
Okay.
But there's so many other freshmen that are on the JV squad that I love seeing them play. They're just phenomenal.
Yeah, and seeing the exuberance. I get a chance to see it firsthand where I'm at, and to see the kids get out there, and especially if it's an exciting game that goes down to the wire.
Which Silver Lake did. It went to double overtime.
Wow. That's fantastic. Super Bowl guy? Yes, no?
Yeah, I mean, well, for the teams, not so much, but my son, because of the Pembroke youth flag football, he was an Eagle one year. He enjoyed it.
Of course.
And so ever since then, he's actually followed the Eagles. And it's funny, where I'm from in South Jersey, I should be an Eagle fan, but I'm not.
Interesting. Yeah, weirdly enough, I was pulling for the Eagles. Weirdly enough, I was not pulling for the Chiefs. It just wasn't happening. I didn't.
No, but plus it's a great fight song, not gonna lie.
Yeah, it is. It's fantastic. So welcome.
Thank
Glad
you.
To have you back. Let's get right into the meat and potatoes. How are things in the great community of Pembroke? I know when I drive through what is kind of perceived the center, you've already gotten things ready for the new community center. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, things went very well. We were so concerned about the $3 million that we were trying to get authorized by the public, and the federal government was able to come on in and help us finish that process. So we are fully funded. We are on time and on budget right now.
Wow.
So it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I don't know what that's been flying around. I don't know if it's a it looks like a stink bug.
Yeah,
the flying around. And it actually tried to do a couple of dives at the senator earlier, but it missed. What I find interesting, now talk to us a little bit about moving the Turner House. I believe that there's going to be a meeting this week. The Public Safety Building Committee will be in front of the Historic District Commission. Yes. About this. So it's a matter of moving it for the sake. How old is the Turner House?
Well, the Turner House itself, of what the information that was given to us by the Historic District Commission, since I am chair of the Public Safety Committee right now, just to let everyone know, said it's circa about 1820s.
Mm.
With fires happening and, you know, other ownerships happening throughout the years, things have changed within the household. So we'll go about 1820s at least. So basically we're looking at about 200 years.
Is the thought preservation or just a matter of moving it off that lot?
Well, no. It's because of the outline of the public safety building itself for the main part of it, which public safety, for everyone to know, when we bought this property back in 2016, everyone kind of talked more about a fire station alone because the then police chief wanted his folks in the center of town still.
Yeah.
Now, the Commonwealth, for years, have wanted always a public safety building. So the combination, which is you save a little bit of money because you have your both departments there together. You have dispatch all in one spot.
Mm.
And it actually is a good print outline or print for the town and for our ISO numbers, so our insurance numbers.
It's interesting that there's so many communities right now that are looking to either replace one component of public safety, mm-hmm. or even make it part of a campus.
Yeah.
I know that right now Abington's looking to do a campus. There would be a fire station, it would be DPW, and it would be right next to the police station. Mm-hmm. So you would have virtually that parcel of land would be your public safety complex. I believe Rockland's looking to build a new fire station.
Mm-hmm.
Brockton actually is in right now moving forward with their public safety campus, which would be a new police station, long overdue, replacing the fire station on Pleasant Street, and then moving their Brockton Emergency Management Agency Center onto that parcel of land as well. That's my understanding. So,
yeah, well, with Brockton, it's great because of what they're doing. Is they're using the same architectural firm as we are with our public safety building. And so I got to figure out what Brockton was doing also. I know it's a city compared to a town, but I always like to see what they're doing. And Mansfield, you talk about a campus.
Right.
They did theirs years ago, I think opened up in 2017, and that has the DPW, police, fire, and it's a beautiful, beautiful facility.
How important are these projects when it comes to the community center? And this is, you know, I remember during the political forums that there was such a conversation about, mm-hmm. this is something that has been languishing for many years.
Yeah. And
is it ever going to get done, or is it just going to be something that is talked about every time around the election? It's moving forward.
Yeah, no, it is. And people had the appetite for doing so. I mean, throughout the years, I heard when former board members would tell me that it fell through because of one reason or another. And we were just happy that we were able to get a group of folks together, including the town membership, to vote for in favor of it. And it's going to look wonderful. I mean, especially my folks on the Council on Aging, since I'm the liaison for the Council on Aging, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, multifaceted, can you tell?
a lot of hats.
Yeah, and I love it because, like I said, my older citizens in the town of Pembroke need this facility. And they should, and hopefully, because everyone's getting older, so they're going to be able to use this facility in either capacity for the rec center or the Council on Aging, where they have programs or they have Meals on Wheels or, you know, anything that's going to be helping them out in the future.
What are some of the things that you're, I believe Gretchen
Edmonds, yes, that's correct.
Gretchen, we've had Gretchen in with Tammy Murray and some of the other COA directors to talk about what they do and their importance, mm-hmm. in the community. So Gretchen's got to be excited, as well as many of those who participate in a lot of the programs at the Pembroke COA.
Oh, indeed. And I said more space for what the building that we have now. Like I said, my dull men are very excited because that's what they meet every week.
Is that an oxymoron?
It pretty much is, exactly. But, you know,
it is.
It's wonderful. And like I said, and they're excited about getting in that building. Some were hesitant at first, but able to speak with them about what's going on, how much it's going to be per year. And when we start knocking it off the debt, on basically going down for other stuff we've done in the past, you know, this is all going to hopefully come out in the wash.
So we had State Senator John Keenan in prior to your joining us, and we chatted a little bit about the budget. You have a new administration, Governor Healey and Lieutenant Governor Kim Driscoll. What is it regarding the selectmen in Pembroke, in regards to reviewing the budget? I understand that you guys recently had a chance to take a look at numbers.
Yeah, we did our first overview, which is great. Since being on advisory, I'm kind of used to the budget cycles ever since 2015. But other members, such as my new member, Steve Cicciotti, I knew would probably have questions, not really dealing with the budget as much as kind of we have throughout the years. So having an overview like the town manager, William Chouinard, did for us, and then going into the minutia later on, I think it will work out well for especially one of our new members and those who, in the public, not really sure. They kind of get, you see numbers, and they kind of freak out because we're pretty much a $72 million business that is basically managed by the town manager and the select board, and then other, of course, facets. Of course, you know, schools especially, because schools have over 50% of our budget.
Right. So, is there any concern with the change in administration that there could be a differing in what your cherry sheets look like, or do you feel it might be status quo?
I think, actually, for right now, I think it's going to be status quo. And as long as that we get ahead of the eight ball, pretty much, sitting there and going, okay, great, we have Kathleen Thatcher now as our state rep for the Bryanville area, for Pembroke. We still have Mr. Cutler. We have two now.
For the price of one.
This is great, you know, because we're able to ask, as long as we get ahead of the game and ask for what our needs are, you know, and basically not once anymore. It really is a need because our Chapter 70 money, though it's gone up in the past, it really is stagnant in the town of Pembroke, where I'm looking at the numbers there. Local aid, you know, it's only going up about $40,000, $50,000 a year, and that concerns me, but... You know, hopefully other revenue that's coming in that's already there can be allocated to our town to help us out with other projects.
Everybody has, I'm sure, already begun distributing their American Rescue Plan Act monies. Mm-hmm. Where does Pembroke stand when it comes to that COVID money for infrastructure?
Well, we did a great deal with the CARES Act, and that I give Plymouth County kudos on that, to say, you know, this is the money we've allocated for you for the CARES Act. Now they have the ARPA funds, which are limited into what capacity we're using them in, but we've already had plans in for our water. So basically dealing with our water issues that we have. Well, I don't want to say issues. Mostly it's capacity issues. And that's the reason why I was so concerned that we were one of the communities, as of May, you know, we go into drought conditions. We get conserve, and you know, and people around July, where we're using a lot of water because of, you know, it's hot out, people are using it, and we ask them to conserve until we can actually help out the tanks to replenish more, and they've done a great job of doing so.
Yeah, it's interesting, and again, it was a question that I had asked earlier in the show. I'm concerned. I mean, I know most folks like going, yay, first off, there's no worry as to having shoveled snow. And if you're a municipality, you got to worry about, depending on how many storms you have, that amount of deficit spending.
Yep.
You're going to have to do in order to keep the, you know, the streets safe. And if there are certain communities that you plow the sidewalk, you're going to have to get an individual out there in the sidewalk plow to make sure if the kids are going to school, those walkways are cleared. But I'm sure that Pembroke hasn't had many days like that this winter, where you've had to worry about, we're going to be, you know, X amount of dollars in the red when it comes to deficit spending.
Yeah, I was looking at especially the totals we had. You know, we had a little snow where I actually had to bring my snowblower at least once.
Yeah, same thing.
You know, and then one day, especially with the black ice and all that, really concerned about the sidewalks and my driveway and see what we're trying to do. And the Pembroke DPW did a great job of, you know, trying to make sure that we were taken care of before everything did happen in the freeze over. And especially that, what, a couple weekends ago when we were negative 30 with the wind chill, you know, that concerned me only because of our elderly, you know, warming stations, and to make sure that our citizens are okay.
Definitely is key. Speaking with John Brown, a member of the select board in the great town of Pembroke, our guest here this evening. Well, we got a few minutes left here. Anything that we haven't talked about, anything that has that is newsworthy, but we don't necessarily hear a lot about because it's something that's in development phases in the community?
I wouldn't say, because everything is, especially with the new town manager, he is definitely on point of basically making sure we have transparency of everything that's going on, and make sure, and even though certain folks say that, you know, they can't find certain things on our website, which is a difficult process, but we're trying to update our website as much as we can going into the new fiscal year and make sure it's accessible, easier for the community to see things going forward. The one thing that I'm more involved with now is I asked the veterans agent, Dave McPhillips, if I could be their liaison. Now, my father was a veteran. He was from 66 to 69. They sent him over to Korea. You know, he tried to basically go to Vietnam. It didn't happen, which he was, thank God for that. But I'm so happy to see what the veterans are doing and doing here in Pembroke for the veterans and in the community in general. I mean, it's just, we had a 96-year-old veteran from Bridgewater, West Bridgewater, or East Bridgewater, coming at Iwo Jima vet. Goodness. You know, great singing voice still at 96.
Wow.
And basically say, and then do the poem, Ragged Old Flag, that Jimmy Stewart used to do on the Johnny Carson show.
Sure.
And it was just phenomenal. And people taking pictures, and he just was on point. It was beautiful. But I loved seeing what Dave does for the veterans there, Gretchen are doing for the seniors. You know, it's the accomplishments that basically get me going for doing this and being an elected official here in Pembroke.
Probably don't have enough time for this question, but I'm going to ask it. let's talk about the Pembroke Chamber of Commerce. How are Pembroke businesses doing in weathering any fiscal storms or dealing with the shortage of help? Because I know that's a big thing for communities these days. Restaurants not necessarily always open because they can't find staff. Or some businesses that I can only be open 4 days a week because there's just not enough people who are willing to apply for the job.
Well, that's a great question, because I actually was talking to Peter Brown today. And he
told me you said hi.
He wanted me to make sure I harassed you. It's great where they're trying to re-energize,
resuscitate it
exactly, and what can we do to help out businesses within town? I said, I know that certain businesses aren't. I mean, there's, like, I'll give an example, Tolson's. You know, they were only open 6 days a week, and now they're open seven. So they are actually getting staff going on there, or folks that, you know, Omelet Factory that's in town. I'm naming off so many. Make sure.
I love after church going to Omelet Factory.
But Gather, which is over on School Street there, you know, a black-owned business that is doing very well, basically open from Wednesday to Sunday.
It's a treehouse too, right? Is there a new place?
The treehouse. All these new ownerships that are going on within town. I am so happy because there's new thought, new feeling. Let's try to energize the town of Pembroke and bring whatever. And for the town of Pembroke's point of view, our meals tax is above what it was last year as of right now. And so that makes me happy that businesses are doing well here in Pembroke, at least restaurants.
Anything you want to say as we wrap up our segment, my friend?
I'm just very happy. Thank you so much for the invite. Just basically saying a few things. You know, I appreciate Pembroke. I love being a public official in Pembroke. And like I said, I hope basically I can bring up more information later on with the public safety building and the community center going forward.
Well, yeah, we'll have you back in a few weeks.
Cool. I appreciate it.
Do an update. He is John Brown on the Pembroke Select Board, our guest. And I can't believe it. Where the heck did our number one go, George? It's gone. It disappeared.
I'm so fast.
You'll have to look for it. But hour number two is ahead, so be prepared. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
Episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We are back later this hour. Quinn Kelly, who you can hear on the Sports Exchange Sunday nights also. He is our WATD sports director. We'll chat with him about the big game that was Kansas City Chiefs, Philadelphia Eagles, the outcome, all that and more. But right now, joining us is a gentleman who's been on this radio program many, many times. And we're excited to chat with him about the latest news. This is where one of their books, one of their best-selling books, is going to be coming to the Wilbur Theater. This is the one about Whitey Bulger. If you missed the one they did last April, where they kind of did a stage adaptation of some of their books, you definitely want to hear this discussion and get tickets. We have Dave Wedge, New York Times best-selling author, journalist, podcast host, award-winning former reporter for the Boston Herald, and much more. Dave, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin? Thanks for the lovely intro, as always.
Well, I'm just reading right off of your Wikipedia page. It's fantastic. How are you?
I appreciate it.
Well, I thought you and I could talk about a couple of different things. First off, the news about the production that you and Casey have coming this May 16th in the Wilbur, one night only.
Yeah, so we're very, very excited about this. You know, my co-author Casey Sherman and I, we came on, you know, we come on from time to time. Where I guess we're regular contributors to Monday Night Talk, and you know, we wrote Hunting Whitey, the book about the chase and the capture of Whitey Bulger and his murder in prison. We wrote that in 2012. We started in 2018, right after Whitey Bulger was killed in prison, and it came out in 2020. The book's done very well, and we did a true crime stage show last year at the Wilbur, and we had several different stories, Whitey being one of them, and the Wilbur wanted to have us back this year, so we decided to go back, and we decided to focus on just the Whitey story and tell the whole story on stage for the first time, and we were lucky enough to get our friend Neil McDonough to star as Whitey Bulger. Neil, a lot of people might know him. He was born in Dorchester, grew up on the Cape, but he's been in everything. He's one of those actors you may not know his name right off the bat, but as soon as you look up his picture, you're like, oh, yeah, I've seen that guy in everything. He's an American Horror Story and Yellowstone and Band of Brothers and Boomtown, Justified. He's just a really, really prolific actor, hundreds of credits. And, he happens to have that look that will be great for Whitey. It's a role that he's always wanted to play. And, yeah, Casey and I are going to bring Whitey Bulger to life on the stage of the Wilbur Theater for the first time ever. So So we're so excited.
Why was it so easy, just of all the stories that you and Casey have told, to just pick this one and say, let's do the Whitey story, and let's do it where we're just, it's a single focus, not necessarily where there's going to be a cornucopia of stories that you tell, because I was privileged to be able to go to that show, and I thought it was fantastic.
No, thank you. Yeah, that one was a lot of fun, but, you know, we think that this Whitey story, obviously it's captured, you know, the imaginations of a lot of, you know, true crime fans. You know, you got Black Mass, you've got The Departed.
Yep.
Our books, there's been a lot of books. Howie Carr's written a bunch of books. There's been a lot written about Whitey Bulger, but the lore never fades, you know, and there's always interest. People always, there's a thirst for more. And, you know, we really look at Whitey as one of these iconic gangsters like Al Capone or John Gotti, that people just always want to know more about the story. And there always happens to be more with Whitey. And we found a lot when we wrote that book. A lot of information that people didn't know about his life on the run, a lot about the whole twisted saga of how he was captured, and also what happened to him in prison and how he wound up in that horrible prison and was murdered. That's all still unfolding. So that's the story we tell, really, in Whitey, Hunting Whitey, is, you know, his life on the run, how he was captured, and then what happened to him in prison. And that's a story that has been largely untold, except in news clippings. And, you know, we've the book, I think, weaves it all together nicely, and the script that we have will really bring it to life. And Neil has always wanted to play Whitey Bulger, and now he has the opportunity to do that on Boston's really most historic stage. You know, the Wilbur is a place where, you know, Bob Dylan has played, and, you know, Marlon Brando. You know, there's been all sorts of incredible performances there over the years. And to be able to, you know, bring this story to the stage for the first time ever at that theater is pretty special. It is one night only right now, and it is already sold out. You know, we would love to add a second night. We're not sure if that's going to happen yet. But, you know, we'll certainly let people know if we are able to pull that together. And, you know, we have a long-term vision for this, too. You know, we want to develop this into more entertainment options, including possibly bringing it to other cities for a stage show. And obviously Casey and I are always looking to develop our books and projects into TV and film. So we've still got a lot of ideas there on how to do that. And Neil would be certainly an integral part of that if we're able to do it.
Let's also talk a little bit about who's leading the direction of this this production.
So, yeah, so Casey and I are the producers and the writers. You know, we wrote the book, we wrote the script,
sure.
And we're the producers of the show. But we're working with a great production company, Media Boss, and they're our friends, Ian Barrett and Erin, his wife Erin. And they are, you know, Erin and I actually worked at the Herald together. That's how we met many, many years ago.
Fantastic.
And her husband, Ian, worked for many years as a producer for WAAF and all of this stuff, and he's just a phenomenal director. She's an incredible creative talent. They've got a great business there that they do all sorts of incredible TV and film production, video. Ian actually, you know me, I'm a metal guy.
Yep.
Ian did a lot of music videos over the years, including several by Godsmack, a Massachusetts, you know, great Massachusetts Grammy nominated heavy metal band. And one of them that he did was actually Sully Erna, the singer from Godsmack, did a solo album, and he performed the whole album in its entirety with an orchestra at the Wilbur. And Ian's the one who produced that whole documentary, and that was an incredible, incredible project that won some awards, if I'm not mistaken. So we're lucky to be working with them.
Yeah, and also the cast is already, you're starting to round out the cast at this particular time as well, aren't you?
Yeah, we've got a great cast. You know, a lot of the folks that appeared in the stage show last year, the Saints and Sinners Night of True Crime, are back. Some in same roles, some in different roles. You know, the great thing about what we're doing and what's going on here in Massachusetts is, you know, because the state embraced those film tax credits that, you know, we have talked about on your airwaves in the past, and some of your listeners are probably aware of, Massachusetts finally codified those film tax credits, so they're never going to go away. So It might seem like mumbo jumbo to people, but it's not. It's real money. It's 25% of a film budget. And in Hollywood, that speaks volumes. You know, the states that offer these incentives are the ones that get the business, which is why Massachusetts film industry is booming right now. You know, they just filmed the new Whitney Houston biopic here. Mm-hmm. Don't Look Up was filmed here with Leonardo DiCaprio. You know, you go on and on and on. And all these incredible productions are being done here every day. But what that's done is it's created a film industry ecosystem here in Massachusetts that includes a lot of SAG union actors, a lot of incredible directors, writers, and then you've got set designers, carpenters, makeup artists, electricians, you know, all the crafts folks that come with a production, a major Hollywood film production. They're all here and they're working. So that gives us as creative producers the opportunity to work with people that really know what they're doing and they're talented and they're here in Boston. You know, in the old days, you know, to find actors for a stage show like this, you know, you'd have to rely on people that maybe don't have a lot of experience. But all of our actors have been in multiple productions, many of them in major films. You know, we got a guy like Gary Tanguay, who you know.
Sports guy.
Was a sports guy for many, many years. Yep. And Gary's transitioned nicely into the film industry. And he's been in all sorts of, he's in Don't Look Up. He's been in, I think, Knives Out, I believe he was in, which was an Academy Award nominated film. And he's had roles in all sorts of films that have been done here around Massachusetts in recent years. And another guy, Paul Kandarian, who actually played Whitey Bulger last year in our stage show, kindly enough stepping aside for Neil. And, you know, Neil's a big draw, so it's kind of a no-brainer. But Paul's going to play Billy Bulger. And Paul did a great job last time as Whitey. And, you know, again, he's another one. You look him up. He's been in so many productions with a lot of major stars. He did a lot of commercials. He's in a new commercial that aired recently. So he's just, if you see him, he's, again, one of those guys, oh, I've seen that guy in a bunch of stuff. So it's exciting to see the film community growing here in Massachusetts, and it's exciting for Casey and I as writers to be a part of it.
Well, it's great also to see a Brocktonian like yourself doing so well when, you know, when you used to, you know, write all those stories for the Herald and, you know, you putting all those hours in, did you ever have that vision saying that one day I want to be a guy who sits down and I tell stories and it's not a matter of what can I do in the next 12 hours to put this, you know, beat a deadline, but yet to be able to tell a story and craft it so well and then not only take that story as in book form or paperback, but then find other mediums to also share that story?
Well, to be honest, it was always my plan was, you know, when I got into the journalism business, I got into it because I wanted to be a writer, and that was the only way I knew how to be a writer and make a living around here. You know, we don't have a TV, back then we didn't have a TV and film industry here, so I couldn't go get a job as an intern at a TV show or anything. So I started writing in local daily news. My first job was at the Taunton Daily Gazette. My second job was at the Attleboro Sun Chronicle, and then I went to the Boston Herald. And you know, I was a news junkie, true crime court reporter, you know, and I loved every minute of it. But it was a grind. You know, the industry is very difficult and challenging, as you know, and it got more so as my career went on. And I was fortunate enough to, you know, be able to reinvent myself after I left the Herald and write all these books and, you know, partner with some incredible people and really hone my craft as a writer, and now I'm learning how to hone my craft as a producer, and I'm learning how to, you know, work within the Hollywood infrastructure, you know, and figure out my way in being a part of big projects and getting projects that I believe in made. And that's what that's what Casey and I do every day, you know, development in film and television and all that's a lot of work, but it's also exciting. It's fun. I love it. And at the end of the day, I'm a storyteller, and it doesn't matter if I'm writing a 300-word article for the Boston Herald or a 5,000-piece for Boston Magazine or a 300-page true crime book about, you know, a biker, which is what my last one was. Whatever it is, I'm going to put my heart and soul into it and try and tell the story and do it justice. And that's what we do every day.
And, of course, the book that, that Dave is mentioning is Riding with Evil, Taking Down the Notorious Pagan Motorcycle Gang, a true crime story, which, well written, Dave.
Thank you. Yeah, that one, it came out in March of last year, and actually it'll be re-released in paperback format in a matter of a couple of months. I believe it's coming out in weeks now. I guess late March, I think it's coming out in paperback. And, yeah, that book's done very well. It's actually still on a lot of the Amazon nonfiction top 100 lists. It's still up there in the top 100 true crime list. And that book's been really a lot of fun. And I'm hoping to have some film news on that one soon. We've had a lot of interest in it, and we've had a lot of talks with a lot of different people, but I'm really just trying to find the right partner to work with on that one. And I didn't write that one with Casey. I wrote that one with the guy who actually was the police officer who infiltrated the Pagans, a guy by the name of Ken Croak. And Ken is from this area. Can't say exactly where for obvious reasons, because he was undercover and infiltrated a biker gang. But he's from southeastern Massachusetts, and I met him through some mutual friends in law enforcement from my days of covering news at the Herald. And we got together, and he told me a story, and I was like, wow, we have a book here. And we wrote that book, and I'm super proud of it. Ken's story is amazing.
Anything else that you want to share in regards to this one night performance at the Wilbur in regards to hunting Whitey? Or is there somewhere folks can go? I know you said that this performance is sold out, but if they want the latest news as to what the team of Sherman and Wedge are up to, where can they go?
So, yeah, I wish I could tell people to go buy tickets. I'd love to be hawking tickets right now. But honestly, it's funny. Someone sent me something the other day. People are actually scalping them. They're selling for a lot of money for this performance. It's a hot ticket in town. We're excited about that. I would love us to be able to add a second night so that more people can experience it, and we'll certainly let you know, Kevin. But if people really want to find out what's going on with Casey and I, the best way is to find us on social media, either on Facebook or on Instagram or Twitter. You know, we're both on there. It's, you know, it's at Dave Wedge on Twitter and at Casey Sherman Writes on Twitter. And, you know, they can just search up our names on Facebook and Instagram, and they can find us. So, we'll definitely let people know if we're able to add a second night.
So I definitely, before I let you go, we have to touch upon one other thing, and that is last year around this time, the hot topic was about Tom Brady, and Tom Brady was going to retire. And so let's not forget that one of the books that you and Casey wrote back in 2018 was 12, the inside story of Tom Brady's fight for redemption. And I think we had you in and we talked a little bit about, you know, Tom's redemption and what he was looking for. Well, it's just he has allegedly filed his paperwork with the NFL to actually retire. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's time. You know, he's proven all he can prove, and I, you know, last year, a lot of people had their opinions on what he should do, and you know, he went through his divorce, and that's very sad. But you know, my take on it was the guy's a football player, and he's going to play football until he doesn't think he can play anymore, and I don't subscribe to this notion that he gave up his marriage for the game. I look at it as, you know, there was probably some problems there anyway, and that, you know, people don't get divorced because of work. You know, they get divorced because of work and other things. So there's probably some other issues there, if I had to guess. I don't have any inside knowledge about it, but certainly Tom Brady was chasing history, and he secured his place and his legacy for generations to come, and I think, you know, you're seeing some great stuff here with Patrick Mahomes, but, you know, it's been 5 years, and, you know, certainly last night was an incredible performance by him and another incredible win for his team, but he's got a long, long way to go. He's got to do what he's just done over the last 5 years. He's got to do that three more times before he can even come close to what Tom Brady's done. So, you know, I tip my cap to Brady for a great career, and you know, thankful for all the memories that he gave me as a sports fan, and especially, you know, me and my dad, who I lost my dad back in September, and you know, my dad was an original Patriots season ticket holder, and started taking me to games when I was a 5-year-old boy. I'd go to those games on Sundays on the old metal benches, Bob Kraft always talks about. And, you know, my dad and I grew up just loving the Patriots together, and we went to so many of those games. We went to several AFC Championship games together, and I'm just very thankful that I had that experience with my dad. And, you know, without Brady, that wouldn't have happened. So, selfishly, thank you, you know?
You know, what's funny is this weekend the missus wanted to see 80 for Brady, and he was the producer of that movie.
Yeah.
So he's already found his new direction besides producing stuff like that, and he kind of started it. But, you know, he's got this 10-year contract with Fox.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, he's got this little $375 million contract with Fox. So I think Tom Brady's going to be just fine. I wish him well in retirement. And like I said, he's a, you know, once-in-a-lifetime talent, you know, and I really don't expect to see anyone, Patrick Mahomes included, come anywhere close to having the longevity and the records and the career that he had. I mean, geez, you look at the numbers and it's just off the charts, you know?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is one heck of a talent, but he's going to have to do it several more times. He's 27 years old, and being a mobile quarterback doesn't necessarily pan out for longevity. I think that Tom's longevity was not only what he had between his ears, but you know, he was just a field general.
Well, I mean, look, Brady went to 10 Super Bowls out of his 22 seasons. Mm-hmm. You know, 10 out of 20. That's just an insane percentage, and he went to 8 straight AFC Championship games with the Patriots. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, maybe Mahomes goes to 10 straight. Maybe he wins 10 Super Bowls. Who knows? We'll see. But, you know, there's a big difference between winning 2 out of 4 Super Bowls when you're in your early 20s and winning 3 out of 5 when you're in your 40s. Big difference, you know?
Definitely a big difference. And, you know, if there wasn't someone named Manning standing in the way of, you know, of Tom, he might have definitely won a few more.
Well, that and, you know, we don't want to talk about David Tyree and Manningham, Mario Manningham, but and Asante Samuel, but easily the guy could have had 10 rings. You know, well, 3 plays was the difference between 10 rings and 7 rings, and that's the game. But either way, just 7 out of 10, just an incredible winning percentage, 70% in the Super Bowl. Like, his playoff numbers will just never be matched. I just can't see it happening, but... great career. So,
you know, I know you're somebody who you don't mind engaging individuals on social media, depending on what the topic is. Do you see the Patriots ever reaching the level of success that they had under Tom in the next 3 to 5 years?
No, I don't, I'm not sold on Mac Jones yet. I'm not, you know, it's a quarterback league, you know, you're seeing that now. The reason the Chiefs are the best team and the team to beat is because Mahomes is the best quarterback. You know, Jalen Hurts is fantastic too, but, you know, Mahomes has that little extra something special that he, you know, he gets that, you know, 20-yard run when you think he's done, you know, and Roethlisberger had it, I think, in a lot of ways, and you know, Peyton Manning had it occasionally. Eli Manning had it twice, you know. So certain quarterbacks have it. So I haven't seen it yet from Mac Jones. You know, we'll see if he develops it. I don't think, you know, my opinion, I don't think that's something you learn or practice or develop. It's something you have or you don't. There's guys in that league who just know how to win and get it done. And those are the teams that become the best. And, you know, I think we've seen it enough with all sorts of teams. I mean, you've seen so many great quarterbacks in that league just never win, and that's why. So I think the Pats have a long way to go.
Well, there he is, New York Times best-selling author, one and only Dave Wedge, our guest. Dave, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kevin. And like I said, we'll keep you posted if we open up a second night. So thanks so much.
You got it. All right, let's do this. Let's step aside. And when we come back, we're going to talk exclusively about the game that was last night. I have a couple of great guests. We're going to have one individual calling in. We might have two calling in. I'm not sure, but I know that there is a mad dog in the house. And we'll have Quinn Kelly here as well. Probably two of the best play callers, sports play callers locally that are going to be in this room tonight. So stay tuned for that in just a few moments. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than two or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Don't miss the Just Steph Show every Monday night from 8 to 10 p.m. for fun guests and tips on living your best life every day. I'm bringing sexy back to Monday nights.
Tonight from 8 to 10 on 95.9 WATD.
Dad, you know I'm willing to drive.
Honey, we're all set here.
But your eyes, you even say so yourself, don't like driving at night.
Well, that's why I'm following the plow.
But that's a sander, Dad. You know what they say.
It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
Oh!
Too late.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Hey! This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back. I think it's not fair to say that the last segment is the best, but in sometimes it can be. Joining us right now is none other than Quinn Kelly, who is not only the host of you still calling it the same name, Boston,
yes.
Sports Exchange,
Sports Exchange, yep.
Sports Exchange, and he's also the sports director.
That's right, yeah.
Call of the game, doing a lot of stuff on the South Shore.
Yeah.
How's it been going?
It's good. It's good. It's been going well. We're in the middle of our basketball season right now and keeping busy, so it's good.
Excellent. And yeah. Then there's Matthew Nelson, the mad dog, who can boast that he can call. How many sports can you call?
Well, let's see. We got.
He hasn't done equestrian and swimming, but I think that could be coming.
I got to be somewhere up around 15.
So he does stuff for. He does a lot of high school sports. He was doing D3 sports for UMass. And now he does stuff for D1 Stonehill, the Skyhawks.
The Mighty Mighty Skyhawks.
Mighty Mighty Skyhawks.
Currently atop the Northeast Conference in men's basketball.
Folks, I'm going to tell you right now, I suspect this dude is cloned because there's no way. Either that or he's a zombie.
A little bit of both.
Somebody I should
honestly,
be.
A little bit of both.
Could he be episode 6 of Last of Us? We'll find out. No. But I thought I would have you gentlemen in here. And we're going to also, I'm going to have someone who we've had on before, Keith Hayes, who is a podcaster who talks sports and all things hyper-local. Have him kind of join us. But I wanted to start with you guys and get your take on the big game. Now, I could boo-hoo, and I was teasing the message. Like, who do you want to win? I'm like, I hope they both lose. Let's be honest here. You know, it was a few years ago that somehow, the Eagles beat the Patriots with a second-string quarterback, Nick Foles, who's a bum right now. And then the Chiefs. The Chiefs are good. Andy Reid, you got to give him a lot of respect. He couldn't get the deal done with the Eagles. But, you know, he's done quite well with the Chiefs. How about them Chiefs? Quinn, I'll go with you first. Give me your thoughts on the game that was prior to the kickoff.
Prior to the kickoff, I was kind of in the same boat as you, Kevin. At least I felt like that was where I was going to be, because it's just hard to root for Philly, right? It's just, you know, Philly fans really are kind of the stain on that city. But ultimately, you know, I like a lot about Philly. Jalen Hurts is one of my favorite players in the league. I think he's a fantastic story. And they have a couple guys on the team that you can get behind. And so, you know, the closer we got to the game, the more and more I realized, boy, I really don't want the Chiefs to win. I think I kind of rationalized rooting for the Eagles.
What's the rationale in not wanting the Chiefs to win?
You know, I think it's twofold. A, they're the team that's best set up to accomplish something similar to what the Patriots did over the last two decades. Right. I think that on top of that, they are the media darling right now. They are the team that's being shoved, you know, down our throats. Patrick Mahomes is the guy that they want to tell you is already on Brady's echelon. So I think that watching them achieve, you know, take another step towards duplicating something we did here, you know, I didn't want to see that.
How about you, Mad Dog?
It's listening to the first hour of the show, talking to a couple of local legislators, right? The city of Philadelphia has a line item for telephone pole grease.
Yeah.
They pre-greased the telephone poles.
It doesn't work.
When they were up big at halftime, and then they kind of fizzled out.
What would you say? So, I thought it was a fantastic game, right?
Yeah.
I know everyone's talking about the holding that wasn't.
Don't get ahead of yourself, but
all I'm saying, and I'm usually not the blame the refs guy. You can't make that kind of call on that kind of stage. In that moment, you can't call a defensive hold for anything less than a blatant hold.
Well, if we're going to go directly to that, it would have been 4th and 8. I think on the clock,
Philly would have had one timeout.
They would have had it, so it would have taken 3 seconds. They would have had 1:45, right?
Plus a timeout.
Instead, you know, they were able, because of that, to get a new set of downs, and they were able to bleed the clock. Which is what a good coach is going to do. Mm-hmm. Not Herm Edwards, but a good coach would do. Sorry.
But isn't this indicative, right, Kevin? That's the first thing we jump to. Mm-hmm. And doesn't that say everything about 58 minutes of one of the best Super Bowls that there has ever been? And then it boils down to a horrible refereeing decision in the end, and that's kind of the sour taste you're left with. You know, that was edge of your seat for that whole game. That was a great game. And I walk away feeling just cheated, almost. We missed out on what could have been an unbelievable ending to one of the greatest games because of a horrible refereeing decision.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think the game would have been any different if in the first half the ball didn't just squirt out of Jalen Hurts' hand and get turned into 6 points for the Chiefs? Do you not think it would have been a different game? Because they were driving. They were driving on the Chiefs.
The turnovers are always huge, especially when it involves a touchdown. That it's a complete momentum changer. I mean, when I saw Philly was up, 24-10 at one point, mm-hmm. I thought it was game over. They're going to run it out, make a couple of offensive plays in the second half, maybe get another touchdown, but they pretty much get it wrapped up, and then Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes. Travis Kelce is Travis Kelce. Love the congratulations after the game. I don't know. It's not appropriate for air, but between the Kelce brothers.
Where was mom to kind of separate those two?
Mom was the best dressed person in the entire stadium. Oh, yeah.
She definitely was. But I mean, will we always remember this game for strictly that call that I hear, you know, hearing Boston sports prognosticators going back and forth, they shouldn't have thrown the flag. Hearing the player himself go, yeah, I held him.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, and I think that's so. I haven't seen. I don't know if it's floating out there video of that quote or if it's just it's been printed. But I don't know. I read that kind of as nothing he says in that situation changes the fact that they lost the Super Bowl. A, B, you don't really want to get fined at the end of the season and have to pay for criticizing the refs. That's always a concern for these guys. And C, I'd give a lot of credit to Philly, which again, you know, you almost choke having those words come out, but. I felt like in the immediate aftermath, they took full culpability for what happened. Right at the end of the day, playing so poorly on defense that whole second half allowed them to fall victim to a call like that at the end. You know, they make one stop the whole second half. That call doesn't have the same effect on the game.
Very interesting to see that how it did have an impact,
though. Oh yeah, yeah. I thought. I mean, this was my biggest thing with it was. It just kind of, you walk away a little bit frustrated, and not to get too far outside of the game, but it more and more feels as though the business side of the NFL is bleeding onto the field of play, right? Like, I think you have there's a case to be made that the Chiefs didn't even necessarily belong in that game. The Bengals kind of got jobbed at the end of the AFC Championship game. And then here you have this. Right now, the Chiefs absolutely could have won it. They're still getting a field goal there. And ultimately, like you said, it's a minute 45. Philly has to go downfield. It seems like best case scenario that game's going to overtime, and Kansas City absolutely can still win it. Philly wasn't stopping him at that point.
See, my thought is that what has been the benchmark or the calling card of the New England Patriots up until the departure of Tom Brady? What's the one thing that they have always been able to do when it comes to their game, when they're playing? Right? Is it not about making halftime adjustments? Making adjustments. Okay, we're having issues here in the first half. This is what we have identified. You know, you could see a team score 20 on them and put a goose egg up on the board. It feels to me as though Philadelphia didn't make any halftime adjustments because how many times did Kansas City punt in the third and fourth quarter?
They didn't.
They successfully drove down the field each and every possession.
Yeah, I think that was – and that, I think, is one of the things you walk away saying credit to Andy Reid, because that's been the knock on him for how many years, is that he doesn't make adjustments in game. You know, he's had so many bad second halves, but it's a credit to him. They were unstoppable in the second half of that game against the best defense in the league.
If Philly was not ready for that extended 45-minute halftime.
No. That's a team that wanted to just keep rolling.
I don't think anybody was prepared to find out that Rihanna was pregnant on international television.
I will tell you, if I was one of the dancers and I had to sign a contract to be up, I'm not a heights person. And to see that they were performing, you know, some 20, 30, 40 feet off the ground, ain't happening.
Kudos to her. She did that pregnant. Like, she's months pregnant. And she performed the Super Bowl halftime show, dangling in the air with a baby inside of her. That's insane.
Well, there was one point, actually, where she was fastened to one of those platforms. It's like there was a little strap behind her. I'm sorry. I don't care.
Still not getting you up there.
I don't care how dazzling it is. Let's do a ground performance, you know? Do like the Who did or Prince did in the rain, you know, many Super Bowls. You know, but so I'm just going back to the game. I'm like looking at the numbers, and I'm astounded as to, first off, how well Mahomes and Hurts did as far as their passer rating. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, it's interesting. I thought that the strategy that the Eagles had for the first half, do like they used to do with Tom Brady, keep the offense on the bench. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm surprised that they I don't know what went wrong, other than looking at, you know, rushing. These teams were able to run on each other with no problem. I thought before the game, I was listening to some radio programs like, oh my God, the over and under for sacks is going to be 5, and they're going to be like 10. And like, yeah, I think they had one sack. There might have been one sack.
Yeah, Philly didn't get one. Best D-line in the league and a quarterback that's, you know, supposedly hurt.
Right.
And they couldn't get after him at all.
It's definitely interesting. And just seeing, I mean,
Vegas missed the line on a lot of things to do with that game. They had the total points is 51.5. We blew past that.
Yeah, and that surprised me because I felt like it was going to be a shootout. We talked on the morning show on Friday. I said I see it being close, but I can't imagine it's going to be low scoring. It's too prolific an offense in Kansas City to be held down all game, and Kansas City in Philadelphia can score points right with them.
You know, it's interesting, and I wasn't too sure during the season how well Kansas City was going to be able to restock, knowing that they had made some moves as far as their pass catchers and some of their drafting. How about you guys? Did you feel going into the season that they were going to have the same success?
No, I mean, I thought it would have been something of a step back, in reason being that you had a Bengals team that had matured a year, a Bills team that had matured a year. So it felt like they could still be very good, but they had just kind of receded to the pack a little bit, and that wasn't the case at all. I mean, they still, you know, now who knows if Cincy is able to play Buffalo in the game that ultimately got washed away, they could have been the one seed. Mahomes goes on the road for the first time in his career. It could be a little bit different, and, you know, we reflect on it a whole different way. But just from what you got from Kansas City this year, no. I mean, how could you think they would lose one of the most elusive receivers in the game and just not miss a beat the next year? In fact, be better. I mean, the stats they showed during the game, and their offense was even better this year.
Before we bring Keith on, we'll bring Keith on in just half a second, but I got another question for Quinn, and you can also answer it. I listened to one of your here and there. I tuned into the Sports Exchange, and there was one show you actually went off about how bad the NFL product was.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you continue to see it, and I think there's so many issues with it, and I think it tends to just boil down to there's a lot of decisions being made for simply monetary reasons without thinking about what the product looks like. Yep. That's why you're getting an extra game in the year. That's why you're getting a shortened preseason. You know, health and safety is a concern, right? So these guys can't be in pads during the off season. There aren't as many padded practices throughout the course of the year, and just generally the whole game. Just a lot of these guys aren't ready come the start of the season. It takes them longer to get into it, and I think the product has generally suffered. And then you have like microcosms of that along the way, like a field that took 2 years to grow and everybody's slipping around last night. I think it's just attention to detail has gone by the wayside.
You're 100% right. Is how many times do we see where the announcers were mentioning, whether it was on a kickoff and the kicker's like slipping, or you go to tackle somebody and you slide, you know, 4 or 5 feet. George, did you want to say something? Because you look like you're busting at the seams in there.
Yeah, I was going to say, just look at even the Super Bowl logo. Like, it's been the same since Super Bowl 45, right? Standardized, very cheap.
Yeah, that's I hate the standardization. You get that with a lot of different stuff now. I feel like that's just the way of the world. I don't like it. I'm with you. I miss the individual.
Stanley Cup logo is the same exact thing.
Yeah.
Did you want to say something quickly before we bring Keith on in regards to?
No, Quinn, you make product? A lot of great points. I mean, the turf fields are the hot ticket item now. Everyone wants to debate the silt film fields that they're talking about. The field in Arizona, natural grass, they roll it out of the dome during the day so it can get sunlight, roll it back in. They opted, their specific reasoning was for a field that would hold up for a week of pre-Super Bowl activities, taking the focus on the field surface, the playing surface, away from the game itself, and just saying it needs to put up with stages and podiums and hundreds of people walking on it every day and all this other nonsense, whereas the focus should be on the game. You're right.
And I think that's endemic of problems across really all major sports leagues. You know, baseball not quite catching up to it. But look at basketball. Like, everybody's kind of modeling the NBA now because of the success they've had, the popularity they've grown.
Yeah.
They're building a reality show with a sports game as the backdrop, right? And I think that you're seeing you know, the NFL's concerns just being pulled away from the actual product on the field. Like, I'm sorry. That's your biggest game of the year. The fact that anybody's talking about the playing conditions, it's just such an indictment on your whole product. It's carelessness.
Joining us to chime in about the Super Bowl is he is the host of a podcast called The Booth. We have Keith Hayes joining us. Keith, how are you doing?
Hey, how's it going, gentlemen?
So I don't know how much you've listened. The last thing that we've kind of left off on is the product itself. But if you want to backspace a bit and talk about the game itself and give your take on it as a whole, whether it's the holding penalty that folks like on, you should have just kept the flag in your pocket. What are your thoughts on Super Bowl 57?
Well, I don't want to beat up the holding call because I'm pretty sure after this season and the way that some of these games have gone, I am pretty sure that will be the topic of conversation at the owners' meetings this year. Number one, inconsistent refs throughout the season. It's been bad. There's nothing else that can be said about it. I'm not going to beat it up anymore. Number two, this thing with receptions and what's a catch, what's not a catch, when is it a catch, when is it out of bounds. My feeling is that there's a lot of confusion. If a guy has 2 feet in and you make that catch out of bounds before you hit the ground, it's usually a catch before you even hit the ground because you're already out of bounds. But then now you've got this thing where, okay, you've got a 180, 200-pound safety on your back as you're going out of bounds. You hit the ground, and, of course, you're not Superman. You can't hold the ball, but now we're, well, it was a little bit of a wobble, so it's an incomplete pass.
Yeah,
it's
moved.
Not a complete pass.
Yep.
Can we really figure this out? Because some things are just impossible. A guy's not going to be able to hold a ball in that situation and keep it from wobbling. As far as I'm concerned, if it's 2 feet in and you've got that ball in two hands or one hand and you're able to pull that in, to me, that's a catch before you even hit the ground because he's already out of bounds. So now we're, you go, Devontae Smith made a hell of a play, yet they took that play away because the ball wobbled a bit. It's just insane. It's just that there's a lot of things that you guys are right. There's a lot of things with the product that needs to be fixed, and they're headed into a bad situation. Bad situation.
Now, I don't know if you want to comment on it because I know you're kind of big on Rihanna. Thoughts on finding out that she was getting up there and, you know, as a second child on the way, we all learn on stage.
Well, you know, I was tweeting about it, and, you know, it was funny because it was the first thing I said was, I said, does she look pregnant? And I said, you know, a lot of people I see today are just bashing her and this and that. And I've been watching a lot with entertainment news, and I find that bad press in entertainment is good press.
Yeah.
And for me, I watched her performance, and I feel like that everything she did last night was strategic for marketing. She's a mother. She owns a billion-dollar industry. She doesn't have to perform at Super Bowl, but the fact that she has a second child on the way, she's 6 months pregnant, she's going to ride this train for 4 months till this baby is born, and people forget. There's a couple of things that people forget here. Number one, they don't get paid for the Super Bowl performance. It's about the exposure, and it's about what they create from it.
Mm.
The Weeknd did the same thing. Rihanna just did that. For the next 4 months until this baby is born, guess what? She's going to ride this wave. She's going to make more money than anybody would have ever paid her for performing, number one. Number two, as soon as her performance was done, her press people released the announcement she was pregnant, number one. Number two, I also heard from a lot of women that are who follow her on her Fenty brand and all of her products, the text messages and emails went out within 2 minutes after her performance about this whole thing. So this was all strategic. I saw someone complaining about her costume attire, and I'm like, well, I says, if I'm her wardrobe designer, they nailed it, because what she wore created the question right out the gate, is she pregnant?
Mm.
And everybody was trending this, and this made her trending right from the beginning of her performance. Number two, people were complaining about the lip syncing. Well, you obviously don't pay attention because ever since Janet Jackson, the NFL has had in place.
Nipplegate?
There's a you lip sync. There's no singing no more in the Super Bowl halftime performance. It's always been a dead mic, or it's always been no lip sync.
Wait. You think Prince performed with an air guitar and a dead mic?
Prince.
In the rain?
We're talking after the Nipples? Janet Jackson debacle.
Okay.
There are artists who are told that they will be lip syncing, they will be performing with backing tracks. And this is what happens. This has been this way in the NFL for the longest time. They don't want dead mics. They don't want mic interruptions. It's 13 minutes of perfection that they want, and they control the narrative. So
all right,
it was no surprise.
So let's go back to football because we got 5 minutes left here.
Yep.
So if we're looking at next year, right, would you say is Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs an instant favorite, or is Jalen Hurts and the Eagles in that conversation? Or is there another team that we think that is going to be in that conversation, depending on offseason moves?
I think that the Eagles are in the best position. They have two first rounds. That D-line is solid. I think the Eagles only get better. That Mahomes contract, they already lost Tyreek Hill because of his contract. Who are they going to lose now because of this contract? You know what I'm saying? You can only go to the well so many times before you can't drink anymore. As far as they go, I think the Eagles have the better chance of making it back to that NFC title game next year, possibly against probably going to be San Fran yet again. So, it's hard. It's hard to say that KC can get there because, like I said, that Mahomes contract is a monster, and it's going to be, well, who do they lose this year to save face with this contract?
Okay. So
who's the Tyreek Hill of this offseason?
So we'll go to Quinn Kelly, of course, host of the Sports Exchange. What says you?
So I think it would be really impressive to me if Philly was right back, just because you so frequently see teams have that hangover off of a Super Bowl loss. Mm-hmm. And they're going to lose their OC, new Colts head coach. So they're set up well to do it. They're super, super talented. They're going to retain most of their talent. And, you know, the NFC is a little bit weaker. I mean, especially talk about, you know, you could have more exodus of talent coming over to the AFC. The Chiefs seem to me like, I think you're right on in saying that, you know, it's a matter of time for them. You have that much money committed. It's too much committed. The salary cap's going to grow, but not in time for them to retain everything they need to. So I think that they'll be the favorites entering the season, certainly. But, I mean, the Bengals are still going to be right there, and God forbid they actually put an actual offensive line in front of Joe Burrow. Then, you know, I think that they could easily become the favorite.
I don't think it's so much putting an offensive line. I think it's a matter of offensive line health.
Yeah, that's true.
Big problem is health.
Yeah, yep.
Matt Nelson, Mad Dog.
I'm liking the Bengals going in. Let me be the first to say, thank God we don't have to watch another Fox Super Bowl for another 4 years.
Really?
I thought Kevin Burkhardt and Greg Olsen did a much better job than they did with the championship game.
I did like Olsen.
Which executive decided it was a good idea to let Terry Bradshaw have a microphone after that game?
Oh, yeah, no, that was something else. Because
he had Terry's money.
I know, he gave some poor clown $1 million.
All right, so we got just a couple of moments left here. How about the Patriots? Do the Patriots, with at least some of the moves they've made on the offensive side of the ball, coaching-wise, do they at least have a sniff at being in the playoffs? Or is the division too far ahead of them right now? Matt Nelson.
I think they have a sniff at a wild card. And I think that because it's either going to be the Patriots or Miami, and I am not confident that Tua will play another full season in his career.
Jets get a quarterback. Watch out.
Jets get a quarterback. The most interesting storyline I'm excited for in the next 5 years, I'm really hoping that Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes turns into this generation's Brady versus Manning. Ooh.
All right.
I'd honestly be surprised if they weren't a playoff team. I'm blindly confident maybe a little bit in them, but you had as bad a coaching staff sans Belichick as you could have possibly had on the offensive side of the ball and still had 8 wins. So I think they make the playoffs next year.
Keith?
Well, I was on this show a few weeks ago, and I told everybody how Bill O'Brien was supposed to be here 2 years ago, and it didn't happen because Nick Saban kept him. Bill O'Brien is that guy that should have been here for Mac Jones 2 seasons ago. He's now here. You're going to see some severe progression from Mac Jones this season. I think you would be a fool to think that this team doesn't make the playoffs. Let's look at this season. This season, they were two, maybe three games away from the playoffs.
Yeah.
With a defensive coordinator as an OC. So now you got Bill O'Brien here, and, you know, the consensus is feeling mighty high on themselves. So I like them for the playoffs next year, maybe even a wild card that, in that route.
And, Keith, if folks want to tune into your show, The Booth, how can they do that on Tuesday nights?
Actually, tomorrow night, Tuesday night, 7 p.m., I actually have a gentleman from the PBR who's coming on tomorrow night at 7 p.m. As you guys know, the PBR will be in Worcester. So it's going to be a good time tomorrow night, 7 p.m.
Have you planned this week's Sports Exchange, or is that in the works?
Yeah, I'm just trying to keep the fire stoked in my belly until Sunday is really where I'm at. We got a little bit of post-Super Bowl. It's actually our 200th episode on Sunday.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So we'll have a little something for that.
All right. Yeah. Get Brendan and Johnny Rourke into the mix. They do a great job along with you.
Thank you.
Support. Anything in closing, Matt Doug?
StonehillSkyhawks.com, NECFrontRow.com.
Anything as far as the local level?
It's a selfless plug right there.
Don Byron game at Abington High School Wednesday night, as they will host the Oliver Ames Tigers for the second honorary game honoring both of those schools' former head coach. Excited for that one.
Awesome. And that's it from Monday Night Talk Central. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you to all of our guests. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night.